The following is a presentation of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
It is time for another riveting and compelling edition of On the Mat. I am Kyle Klingman of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame Dan Gable Museum, along with Andy the Owl Hamilton of TrackWrestling.com. And our mailbag is a little light today, but last week we had such a heavy mailbag that feels good on the arms to be able to stretch them out a little bit and answer a light mailbag, Andrew.
The Owl.
The Owl? You're a night owl. You can stay up till 3 or 4 in the morning, and I don't know how. I would be dead right now if I had your schedule, and you just keep going and going and going, and you can work all hours of the morning and night. I'm trying to pick up on your speed a little bit.
Okay.
I don't know if I should have said night owl, if that would have clarified a few things, but I'm just going straight up owl.
Okay.
Yeah. But you don't agree with that assessment?
No, that's fine.
You have some work habits that go deep into the night.
It's like probably my favorite segment of this entire show every week is the intro.
Yeah.
There are a lot of favorite parts of this show, but I really appreciate the intro every week because you always buckle my knees with the curveball you throw at the beginning.
Well, good baseball reference there, the curveball. But hey, if we get into the mailbag, there's going to be some baseball references that we're going to mix into this because our light mailbag includes the response from Ramey Walther, who had a slew of tweets, and we had a chance to address all of those tweets on last week's show. And he just responded, he's going to continue to look for that elusive dual meet where there's one win by a fall, and that wins the dual meet because everything else was won by 1 or 2 points. You have searched 500 dual meets.
Close to 1,000, actually.
Now. Okay, close to 1,000 now, and you found zero.
I found zero duels, and you're looking at a duel that would end 27-6 under today's scoring. Because you got correct. 9 decisions and you got 1 fall. And I have not found a 27-6 score where there's 1 fall for the team that scored 6 and there are 9 close decisions. So we're going to keep looking.
Well, so let's just break down what that would mean and why it's almost impossible to happen. So let's just take a team that would have Steven Abbas. I think 1 year he won over Jody Strittmatter in a dual meet 14-1 when they wrestled University of Iowa, went out to Fresno State. So a team like that. So you're saying that you have one standout, a guy that will win the NCAA championships, and then the rest of the 9 guys are so good that they can be competitive with every single person on that team. That's just so unlikely.
But not good enough to win.
That's right.
This is the argument that we've gotten the most when we've pitched cumulative scoring to people is, well, what if one team wins once by fall and they lose the other 9 matches? And here we are, after looking through 1,000 dual meet scores, close to 1,000 dual meet scores, I have not found one instance of that happening. So you're looking at maybe one in a 1,000 at most would be my guess. It's going to be fun to dig through like the next 1,000 and 1,000 after that to see if we can find one and how far back you have to go just to find one. Because I think you're dealing with a needle in a haystack trying to find a 27-6 score where there's one fall for the team that lost, 9 close decisions for the team that won.
But even if it does happen, I want to go back to what you said last show. It was like, who cares? It's so rare. And I think we want to set up standards where we want this to be a little bit more unfair. So it adds entertainment value. And going back, because dual meets at this point do not matter. And so why not put a scenario in there that gives some excitement for the fans? And The baseball reference now is Jacob deGrom, who is our Cy Young Award winner from the New York Mets. 10-9 record on the season, but he was the best pitcher in baseball by far. 1.70 ERA, ERA plus 216. FIP, which I don't know what that means, 1.99.
Fielding independent pitching.
Okay, but he was number one in that category. So you're talking about the best pitcher in baseball has a 10-9 record. That's not fair, Andy. It's not fair at all. But he's still the best pitcher in baseball, and his one loss record doesn't reflect that.
I'm proud of you, Kyle, because you've come around on this topic. Remember when one of our first conversations in the fall of probably 2016, when we were talking baseball, and you said, but his win-loss record isn't all that impressive. I don't remember who we were talking about, but I'm like, Kyle, that's...
It's irrelevant, isn't it?
Archaic, yeah.
And even if you look at his...
There's so many factors that can influence pitcher's win-loss record.
His career one-loss record, and he was Rookie of the Year in 2014. 55-41, you'd think that guy isn't any good. You'd say he's not, I mean, that's not that good.
You would have 20 years ago or 10 years ago, probably.
Yeah. But today, the metrics are different. So
it's not Jacob deGrom's fault that his offense can't score runs and his bullpen can't hold leads.
True. And it's just like it shouldn't be someone else's fault on the team that they can't get pins. I mean, if you can get a pin, we want to reward you exponentially for it. And I think that's the fun of what can happen. We still have the problem of what you do for tournament scoring. That's still a problem. We haven't figured that out. But I think we're so close on the use of cumulative scoring with dual meets that I just think it could be exciting. And let's just use this example. In 2006, Iowa wins 24-6. You were there for that.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first dual meet where Tom Brands wrestled Cale Sanderson. Not they didn't wrestle each other, but it was
almost.
Yeah, they almost did. Gable came back, so Gable was back in the fold.
Gable flipping the arm. Remember, I didn't flip him the bird; I flipped him the arm.
That was probably one of the top 10 dual meets in that series history, from just excitement point of view. That was a great dual meet. The end of 24-6. So on paper, you'd say Iowa blew them out. They didn't blow them out. Every single match was down the line. I think the closest match was 6-2, and that was a future Olympic champion winning that, Jacob Varner. But if you go cumulative scoring, 58-46, that's more indicative of what really happened. That gives paints a better picture than 24-6. It wasn't
that
domination.
That dual meet was bonkers. You started off with Perry and Travis Paulson in the first match, and Perry has to score a couple scramble takedowns, one to force overtime. He took an injury time in there that infuriated the Iowa State bench. And then he came back and won it in OT with another scramble takedown. And the coaches are out in the center arguing. And I remember like Hartung pointing at the Iowa bench and Cuse and Perry had taken a phantom injury time. And then Tom Brands throwing it back and saying, we're trying to work the kinks out of Mark Perry because Tim Hartung was at Iowa and coached him the years before, and throwing it back at him like, we're trying to fix the problems that you guys created with him. There were a lot of comments after that dual meet that still resonate with me, still stick with me.
Yeah, there was a lot of pent up, anger. Would that be the right word? Because it was almost like, you have the two new coaches, Tom Brands is in, Zaleski's out, Cale Sanderson's in, Bobby Douglas is out. You got Tim Hartung, who you said was at Iowa as an assistant coach, goes over to Iowa State. I just think it was just pent up. They were just going to let it fly.
Yeah.
And then to add to that, you have John Smith's nephew in the very first match in this historic rivalry. How could you
you got two top five opponents going at it in the very first match, and it is heated.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
And you got the Paulsons, who are identical twins and have that representation like Tom and Terry Brands, wrestled like them in spots and had that aggressive style. So it really was a meet that, if you can find it, go watch Iowa's win 24-6 over Iowa State from 2006. Also, just recently, Iowa State won 29-17 over Rider. Rider had three falls, so you think, they're going to win the meet, but nope, they didn't. Iowa State had had two falls as well, dominating the other five matches. So if you did cumulative scoring, 110 to 88. So
that's again, about a, that's a pretty high scoring duel, huh?
Very high. Yeah.
If you didn't see too many duels where both teams are over 85.
Yeah. And if you compare it to the other one, 58 to 46, and then you go 110, 88, I think that's what you want out of cumulative scoring. So like you said, we're not seeing many that go the other way because the fall is making that much of a difference, because there's usually going to be guys on the team that are going to have dominating performances.
When I look at rules for college wrestling, Kyle, I think from my vantage point, the top two priorities ought to be simplicity and promoting action. And that's what I think has been driving our push for cumulative scoring. One, it's simple. If you're sitting at home, you know that one guy scores 20 points, the other guy scores 10, that one team's getting 20, the other team's getting 10. That's pretty simple to follow. Add it up as we go. The other part is promoting action, and we think that it would do that too. Where the illustration that you sent to me the other day, 11-0, it's 11-0 in the closing seconds. Oh, unless you take a guy down and take him to his back, you're not getting the tech. Unless the other guy takes him down, takes him to his back, he's not avoiding the major. That would put some incentive for both guys to score one more takedown. So 2 points might be pretty valuable in the end. If 10 guys on each team score, you know, go out and score two more points in the final 30 seconds. Think about the difference that 20 points could make in one dual meet.
It would make a lot of difference, as we just see right here. Look how close these matches are. And yeah, as of right now, no incentive if you're up 11-0 for either guy to score, unless you're wanting to go all the way for it and it's at the end of a meet and you really need bonus points to help your team.
So before we go any further, I think the challenge we need to give our listeners is find us one dual meet, a 27-6 score, where the team that won 9 matches won them collectively by fewer than 22 points, right?
Yeah.
And if they do, we'll come up with
a prize package here. There's no doubt. If you can find that score, that needle in the haystack, I want to know what it is. It's worth us giving you something. So if you have that in you to find that score, which I truly don't think you're going to find, I just think it's not going to happen because of what we just said. If there's a guy that gets a fall, the rest of the team isn't going to be so good that they're competitive within 1 or 2 points the rest of the dual meet. I just don't think it's going to play out.
There's got to be one out there somewhere. So
probably, but
somebody's out there, man, like digging through stacks of amateur wrestling news issues from the 80s and 90s before we had dual meets recorded on the internet. You're going to find one somewhere, I think. But yeah, the first one to get us one of those, let's hook them up with a prize pack.
Yeah, we'll do that. And as we're talking about what needs to happen, what's our dream list of rule changes to keep it simple? One of the things that freestyle does is a shot clock. Could you just do some sort of a shot clock where a guy's on it every 15 seconds and you alternate during the match?
I don't know.
Is it 30 seconds like freestyle? Is it 3-point takedown, 1-point step out? What is it that is that magic formula to incentivize action?
Well, the one thing that I felt here a couple, 3 years ago, where we were seeing a ton of scoreless first periods, was to go to something along the lines of an activity clock in college wrestling, where if 2 minutes pass by and there's no score, one guy goes on the clock, the guy that the referee deems has not been the aggressor of the two, the least aggressive of the two, the more passive wrestler of the two. He goes on the clock and he's got a minute to score. Get the last minute of the first period to score. Otherwise, it's a point. And that way it breaks up that 1-1 into the third period or into overtime, and we still haven't seen anything happen type of match. Where, like I said on last week's episode, I think the best wrestling in college wrestling occurs in the final minute when one guy's down a point and the other guy with the lead has been warned, where somebody's on the chase and the other guy can't run. And that's the great thing about freestyle wrestling, is for the final 4.5 minutes, somebody is trailing because of criteria. So I don't know that you want to go all the way to criteria in college wrestling, but I think breaking up that 1-1 into the third period or into overtime type of match would be good. I think that'd be good for action. I think I would prefer just to see a pure step out point due to the fact that there's so much inconsistency in the way that edge of the mat call is being made. It would be like the strike zone in baseball. One umpire calling it from the top of the shoes up to the belt, the other one calling it from the belt up to the bill of the cap, one guy calling extremely narrow strike zone, the other one widening the plate out about 8 inches on each side. So stalling to me is the most inconsistent call in sports. And to try to get away from that maybe a little bit would be good for the sport, to just make it so fans who are casual followers understand it a little bit better. And Bob Bowlsby kind of hinted at that a little bit, right? That there's a lot of things in the sport that are hard for the casual fan to understand. Heard some people say get rid of stalling. I don't agree with it. To get rid of it.
Okay.
Because of the fact that how do you get somebody to engage if they got a 1-point lead in the final minute and there's no stalling? There are no repercussions for stalling. Do we just let people chase them around the mat? You know, it'd be like, people have said, well, there's no such thing as stalling in other sports. And I'm like, wait a minute. Yeah, there is. There's a shot clock in basketball. There's a play clock in football. You can't just stand out there in baseball and not pitch. You know, you have to participate.
Yeah. So there has to be something to incentivize it or else
require it. Yeah. Not even incentivize it, but require somebody to engage. And David Taylor said to me in our 7 minutes interview that we did a couple weeks ago, that's the one thing he would change is get rid of stalling. And I asked him the same question. Well, like, how do you get people to engage? And he goes, well, I don't think that way. I'm like, yeah, I know you don't, but not everybody thinks the way David Taylor thinks. They're not thinking score 20 points in a match or 10 points in a freestyle match. They're thinking about how do I get my hand raised? A lot of people are thinking that way. And so when they've got a 3-2 lead or a 4-2 lead, they're thinking how much times there's some people out there thinking how much time's left on the clock? How much do I have to hold this guy off?
Most are that way.
Yeah. More than not. Yeah. Right.
That's probably why David Taylor is a world champion right now, because he has a style that allows it to manifest itself and why he put on such a fun performance. Not saying that there's guys that can't just keep it solid and stall it out a little bit, but he has an entertaining style. And I think it's why we remember him. I think that's why we want to talk about David Taylor, is because he does have that style. And I think the best teams that we're talking about quite a bit have that style regardless of the rules.
Yeah, well, David Taylor is an all-time great in college wrestling, not because he's a two-time champion, because there's a lot of two-time champions out there, but he's an all-time great because he put up a ton of points. His matches that he won, most of them weren't very close. He's a two-time Hodge Trophy winner and one of the most entertaining guys that we've seen in the last quarter century and probably all time in college wrestling.
Yeah. Sophomore season, he pinned four guys and had a tech in the finals, half a point away from perfect score and pinning his way through the championship. So he does have that style that you want to remember. And yeah, four-time finalist, two-time champ, and he did it the way you want college wrestling to be. He had that product that we want for college wrestling. We've been talking about this. We haven't even talked about the guest you lined up.
Yeah. Andrew,
This is pretty cool that we have someone that's going to be playing in the Super Bowl. Austin Blythe is going to join us on the show today. He's on the offensive line for the Rams, and we get a chance to talk to him. You covered him extensively when you were at the Iowa City Press Citizen and at the Des Moines Register. What do you remember about his story and him playing football?
Well, I have more Austin Blythe wrestling memories than I have Austin Blythe football memories, but I covered him a little bit when he was with the Hawkeyes. I covered his recruiting story. Austin grew up about 25 miles west of Iowa City in Williamsburg, wrestled at Williamsburg for Grant Eckenrod there, played football for Kurt Ritchie down there. He remember the first time I saw him, I heard a little bit about this kid from Williamsburg, and I knew his brother Holden. His brother Holden was a state champion. Older brother Holden was a state champion, went on and played football at Central College, and just a great family. I remember that the state tournament, this is one of the things I remember most about Austin Blythe, just an absolutely phenomenal family. The state tournament every year at the Iowa City Press Citizen, district meet would be on Saturday, and then I would spend Sunday and Monday rounding up mugshots of all of our state qualifiers. And usually there were between 35 and 40 from a dozen schools, and that stretches out about 25 miles in every direction. And Williamsburg was always a little tougher to get to than most because of the fact that there wasn't another school out to the west like they were. And so that was always the one that when I would make my swing around Johnson County there, that would always be a little bit tougher to get to Williamsburg. And Austin Blythe's mom, Mary, would always take the mugshots of the state qualifiers from Williamsburg and send them to me. And I always appreciated that. But just a great family in Austin. I remember the first time that I watched him wrestle, I thought for a minute, like, holy smokes, this kid is a monster. Like, how good of a wrestler is he going to become? Because he was 260 some pounds probably as a high school freshman and so light on his feet and athletic. And then I watched him a little bit more and I'm like, yeah, we're probably not going to see this guy on the mat in college because of how athletic, big and athletic he was. And just sitting there playing it out in my mind when hearing he's a football player too, I'm like, this guy's got a big time future in football as well. And so he wound up committing to the Hawkeyes, playing offensive line for Kirk Ferentz down there, a 4-year starter, and started on the team that went to the Rose Bowl, played in the Big Ten title game, and latched on with the Rams here a couple of years ago, started every game this season for them, and he's had a tremendous career so far.
It's going to be fun to talk with Austin Blythe on our program. We're also going to try a segment, periodic segment, that we're going to have with Jacob Casper. And if you have ever met Jacob Casper, you know he has lots of good things to say, entertaining on and off the mat, wrestle for Duke. We've interviewed him a couple times on a couple different formats. And we're going to have a Casper's Corner with two-time All-American Jacob Casper. And we are going to have Jacob Casper on the line. Welcome, Jacob. Well, this is your opportunity to talk and ask questions. This came on the heels of having great conversations with you during the World Championships in Budapest in 2018. And we're going to let this be an open forum for you. So we're going to let you ask a question. And along with Andrew, myself, and of course, Jacob Casper, we're going to discuss and debate the questions. So this is your forum. What is our first question for Casper's Corner?
The first question for Casper's Corner would be, would you rather win an individual title, but your team takes second, or would you rather finish second, but your team win the team title?
An outstanding question that I think opens up an entire this is difficult. This is a difficult question. I'm going to start with this. I'm going to say, and this isn't exactly what you were asking because the stats are a little bit off, but I'm going to go to the 2012 NCAA Wrestling Championships. The University of Iowa placed third, and they had one individual champion. Cornell placed fourth, and they had three individual champions. So just based on that, I think in that situation, both teams get a trophy. They weren't the championship team. I'd rather come away with three individual championships in that situation. I don't know if you have any thoughts, additional thoughts on that, Andy or Jacob, but that's my initial thought to your question. So I'm going with individual on this particular question, Jacob.
I was in the same boat. I think the sport of wrestling is an individual sport, and if everybody takes care of their business, then at the end of the day, team titles will come. Anything less than a national title, I can testify, leaves you feeling unsatisfied. And at the end of the day, if you're taking home multiple national titles or an individual title, you're going to be happy. Whereas if you maybe finish second, but you know, bring home the team title, but finish second, there's still going to be some residual bad feelings about the national tournament, despite having the team title. So at the end of the day, I think wrestling is an individual sport, although team does factor into it. And for that reason, I would always take the individual title over the team title.
Andrew?
I would say this. That's the avenue I would go down as well for those reasons. However, I think if you're in a program that is climbing and has never accomplished that goal before, I think it would be really cool to be a part of a championship team and have that bond with that group of guys for the rest of your life. If you're Oklahoma State and you've won 34 titles or Iowa, you know, 23, might be a little bit different. I remember in 2009, Tom Brands walking out of the arena in St. Louis with his arms wrapped around the championship trophy and feeling pretty down and out about leaving there with no individual champions after Metcalf lost to Caldwell in the finals. And it was such a interesting snapshot to see a coach with a national championship trophy in his arms feeling that down. I would like to know how Kyle Snyder feels about this, because he was part of Ohio State's first national championship team when he finished second, when he lost to Kyvan Gadson in the finals. And yet he wraps up his career last year with a title and Ohio State finishes second. It'd be interesting to hear Kyle's response to that.
I think he'd be,
you know, I was fortunate enough to be at the World Championships with several guys that were able to do both, and getting to pick their brains on it, guys that, you know, fell short and also did not fall short and got the individual title. And, you know, Kyvan Gadson, someone that got the individual title but did not experience a team title, chose the team title. Mike Machiavello, someone that had experienced the individual title but not the team title, also chose the team title. However, the guys that had experienced both, like Bo Nickel, said that they would take the individual title, although he felt that Mark Hall was actually happier last year because they won a team title than would he have been had he gotten an individual title, but they had not won the team title. So it was interesting to get some of those guys' perspectives, some people that had done one but not the other, and then some people that had done both.
So based on what you said there, I think a lot of it's predicated on what you've accomplished already, that if you had right. the individual championship, of course, the team championship seems like the void. But for that guy that hasn't experienced either, I think they're probably going to say, hey, I'm in this to get an individual championship. And if you take a guy like right. Thomas Gilman, he was a world silver medalist and he was on a team championship in 2017. I don't know that team championship fills a void for him. We'd have to ask him that. I think he's proud of that, but I think he wants an individual championship and the team comes secondary.
Absolutely. I think, you know, like you just said, I mean, I think it's what people haven't experienced or what they would want to. Mike Machiavello made the interesting point. He said, you know, I had my feeling of being a national title, but I looked around at 9 other guys that didn't hit that goal. Whereas if we won it as a team, everybody could forever say they were a national champion. And that was an interesting perspective, something I hadn't thought of. But you know, I stick to my guns. I still think I would take the individual titles, because at the end of the day, unless you win that title and the team title together, it's just not going to be as sweet, because you know that, you know, you left business unfinished on the personal end.
The team that would be fun to hear their thoughts from the 10 individuals is that 01 Minnesota team that didn't have a champion or even a finalist. They just had 10 All-Americans. They won the championship in Carver Hawkeye Arena. I'm guessing that team championship is pretty darn sweet.
It was the first one for them.
For them. First one they've ever won in program history. No finalists. 10 All-Americans. I'm guessing that they're going to say that team championship is really special. And it'd be fun to ask the guys that eventually won it, like Becker and Lawrence, and see what they said. But great question here. We appreciate you coming on Casper's Corner. I'm sure you have another question brewing for us for when we have you coming up in a few more weeks. But all the best. Real quick, how's your competitive career going? You going to enter the U.S. Open this year?
Planning on it, you know, just training hard right now. I'm fortunate to be in a situation where I can coach and wrestle with the guys at Duke, as well as shoot over to Raleigh multiple times a week and get great training in with Nick Wisdowski, Mike Machiavello, Timmy McCall, Tommy Gant. You know, I'm in a really fortunate position that I'm able to kind of experience everything folk style, freestyle, a little bit of Greco here and there, and just trying to become the best wrestler I can. Look for me in the U.S. Open. Not sure what style yet, but I'm looking forward to wrestling in it for sure, and excited to be back on Casper's Corner in a few weeks.
All right. And you had a great match with Kyvan Gadson. That's entertainment at its finest. You guys had some great scrambles there, and we appreciate you putting on an entertaining style of wrestling for us.
Thank you. That means the world to me. You know that.
All right. We appreciate it. That was Casper's Corner. We appreciated Jacob Casper being on the program with us. Again, that was a periodic segment that we will have on the mat with a question from Jacob Casper. Before we get into our interview with Austin Blythe, we want to remember the life and legacy of Dave Schultz, who was shot and murdered on January 26th, 1996. So, man, 23 years. And I think most people are going to remember the tragic ending and how Dave Schultz impacted people and how he was such a transcendent figure in our sport. But when you just look at his career in comparison to wrestlers of today, you're looking at a guy that made the 87 World Championship team, got beat out by Kenny Monday, actually bumped up a weight class to 180 and a half for some of those years, couldn't make a team until Kenny Monday got out of the fold. So from 88 to 92, he wasn't on a world team, stuck around, and then at the age of, I think it was 32, was still in the mix and then gets a world silver medal in 1993, then makes the world team in 94, 95, and then he was murdered in early 96. And the showdown was supposed to happen between Kenny Monday and Dave Schultz. Of course, it didn't materialize. But when you think about that in context of today, the staying power that he had, I don't think that part of the story gets articulated enough, that here was a supposed dry spell where he doesn't make a world team, sticks with it, and then comes back in 93, makes it at 163 and gets a world silver medal. I don't know how many guys would do that under today's scenario. That's a pretty remarkable stat that Dave Schultz has, that I don't know that there's a lot of other guys that have that in their career history.
Sure. Yeah, and there's so many parts of his story that are so fascinating. That what you're talking about, then it, you know, mostly to me the most compelling part is the personality and the legacy that he left that way. And I don't know that I've ever heard anybody say anything bad about him.
Yeah, that's the amazing part, is he was just larger than life. And hey, he was tough on the mat, though. I mean, the guys that probably said anything bad about him are the guys that they got pinned by him or got tortured by him. But he just was a wrestling savant. I think he was kind of that starving artist, but he was a wrestler because he just loved it. He was a wrestling junkie, and you just saw him as that guy that embodied why we like wrestling, because he loved it just as much as we loved watching it, or all those stories that we appreciate about the sport. He was that. He defined what we love about the sport. And I don't know what to compare it to. I mean, Kyvan Gadson is older than Kyle Snyder, so it's not apples to apples here, but say Kyvan gets good here. He's good now, but just starts making world teams, beats out Kyle Snyder. And then 6 years later, Kyle Snyder just sticks with it and then makes another world championship team because Kyvan turned the corner. That just almost seems unheard of today, to be able to do something like that. And just that he was able to stick around. He made a world team at 35. And I know there's guys that do that now, so it's not completely abnormal, but to be able to stick around and bump up the weight classes. And he actually won his first world medal at 180 and a half because Lee Kemp was there. So he tried a weight class higher and wins a bronze medal at the weight class up, and then goes back down to his normal weight and then wins a world championship in 83 after he wins a world bronze medal at the higher weight class. So just a lot of pieces to Dave Schultz's story that need to be remembered. But we remember his life because he was murdered 23 years ago from just a tragic way to die. And we just want to continue to remember him. The Dave Schultz Memorial Tournament still takes place, and just a great way to remember someone that deserves to be remembered in our sport and that you need to look into more. We can talk about him a little bit here, but I think you want to dive into the history and watch some of the documentaries and hear what people say. And it really is a testament to what Andy said, is that, I don't know, there's a lot of people that are going to say much bad about this guy because there's not much bad to say.
You think about, too, where would our sport be in the United States if that hadn't happened, if he were still with us today?
I've wondered that. That's a great, I think he would probably be our national team coach at some point. I don't know if he'd still be there now, but I think he'd be in the developmental role. I think he'd be working for USA Wrestling right now. I think he'd still be involved in some way. He would have been 36 plus 23. So he'd be pushing 50 right now, or no older than that, probably pushing 60. So when you think about that, where would he be? I think he'd be in some level of USA Wrestling. I think that's where he belonged. And what that looks like, I don't know if he's with Titan Mercury, but the sport got changed once Foxcatcher got out of the fold. And you have to look back and you say, hey, Foxcatcher did make an impact. We won our world championships in 93 and 95 because of a system that Foxcatcher had. And it was not necessarily regional training centers, but it was that model that we need to pay these athletes. It just so happened that John DuPont was at the head of that, and he wasn't mentally stable, and it ended really poorly for the United States. But we got good because of a system that we have in place today because of regional training centers. And you have to say that Foxcatcher Farms was part of that movement, and it paid dividends while we had it. So we go into our interview with Austin Blythe. Let's talk about some of the other wrestlers that are playing in the NFL right now, and they happen to be playing for the Rams right now too. Just their offensive line is a wrestling juggernaut, isn't it?
Wow. Yeah, the Rams, I tweeted this the other day, the Rams are heading the Super Bowl. Austin Blythe, starting right guard, three-time Iowa State High School champion, three-time Fargo All-American. He was a cadet finalist in Greco-Roman, 188-11 in high school, fifth all-time in Iowa history with 146 falls. So I think he only lost one match his last three seasons of high school, if I'm not mistaken. Starting next to him is John Sullivan, who was a three-time Connecticut state champion. He's the starting center for the Rams. He was also a senior nationals All-American. And then backing up Sullivan is Brian Allen, who was an Illinois state champion, finished third or better all 4 years in high school. He went 3-3-1-2 in high school. Yeah. So the Rams are a wrestling powerhouse up front on offense. Flipping over the Patriots, though, we had an interview last year, Track Wrestling. We had an interview from Super Bowl Media Day with James Ferentz, who was a state finalist in Iowa as well. And matter of fact, James Ferentz and Austin Blythe were both in the state finals in 2008. Austin Blythe was a freshman. He was a runner-up that year. James Ferentz, Austin Blythe was in 2A. James Ferentz was in 3A for Iowa City High. He lost in the finals to Eric Thompson, who went on to win three NAIA titles at Grandview, now with Nittany Lion Wrestling Club. So if you were wrestling in the 2008 Iowa State Heavyweight Finals, you had a 33% chance of playing in the Super Bowl one day.
Wow. It's a good stat. Does that make you put one a poll for the Rams a little bit more because they have an offensive line that has full of wrestlers?
Yeah, I mean, Rams? But I like James Ferentz too. I covered both those guys growing up, both James and Austin. I'm happy that one of them's getting a Super Bowl ring. But yeah, it's great to see them both having success. James was on the practice squad a year ago. He's on the active roster now, so that's good to see. Very cool that both those guys are going to be, yeah, all four of those guys.
I'm pulling for the Patriots solely because I'm such a big Stephen Neal fan, the greatest wrestling story transitioning into football ever. Guy didn't play a down in college football, world champion, 1999, two-time NCAA champion, and then goes on to a 10-year career in the NFL. I've liked the Patriots ever since that. So I got to tell Austin that on the interview that I'm pulling.
I will.
Okay, go ahead. And then I'll have to explain. But that's why I'm a Patriots fan, even though Stephen Neal is not on the team anymore. He's just carried me, and that's why I've followed the New England Patriots ever since. Let's get to our interview with three-time state wrestling champion and a man that's going to play in the Super Bowl against the Patriots, Austin Blythe. Our guest today, very special guest, three-time Iowa High School state wrestling champion, four-time finalist. He went to the University of Iowa to play football, not to wrestle. Now he is in the National Football League. He is going to play in the Super Bowl. He is the starting offensive guard for the Los Angeles Rams. Austin Blythe is with us. How are you, Austin?
I'm good, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Well, let's start with wrestling because that is the fun part here for us. You were a four-time finalist, three-time state champion. How often do you think about missing out on being a four-timer?
Honestly, not too often. I was very proud of my accomplishments in high school, and it all ended nicely. So no complaints, no regrets from me in that respect.
Austin, if memory serves me correct, I could be wrong here, but the numbers I have in my head were like 33-10 for your record your freshman year. I think I'm in the ballpark. And then
I think you're pretty close. Yeah.
Then right on. You ended up 188-11. So that means you lost one match your last three seasons. And if my memory's correct, I think you went in unranked into the state tournament your freshman year, and then you got on a roll. What happened that week in Des Moines that set you on the course to becoming a three timer?
I don't know. I think I remember. So the Benton tournament is a tournament that we go to every year for Coach Eckenrod's late father. It's right after Christmas. And, you know, I was kind of ho-hum up until that point, my freshman year. And then I ended up winning that tournament that was filled with great wrestlers. It just kind of opened my eyes. And I think that's probably what really set me on that path more than the state tournament did. Just, you know, made me aware of the abilities that I had that God gave me. And I just worked hard to try and hone those skills and improve. And that's kind of how the way it went.
Were you always planning on being a wrestler? Was that something you always had in your DNA that you wanted to do?
Absolutely. I think my dad was a wrestler, so I just kind of grew up around it, or grew up interested in it. My two older brothers wrestled. My younger brother wrestled. I mean, we just come from a family that wrestles, and it was just something that I always saw myself doing. And, you know, I liked it throughout elementary school, and I was a decent wrestler and all that stuff, but I really fell in love with it in high school, probably. Just the work that it takes to be good at wrestling is very rewarding at the end of the day. And I think it's a sport that where if you really truly work on it, you're going to be rewarded. It's just the epitome of, you know, hard work paying off.
When you are in high school and you're playing football and wrestling, do you have favorites that you go back and forth with, or was it football was more fun, wrestling's harder? How did you compartmentalize those two sports being back-to-back seasons?
I don't know. That's a great question. I never really thought about it before. I always loved football for the team aspect, just sharing and the triumphs and the failures and everything that comes with football as far as a team sport goes. But there's also something to be said for wrestling being, yeah, there's a team aspect to wrestling, but going out there and being an individual and everything being solely on your shoulders was always an awesome feeling for me. I think I relish that a lot. And I've said that, you know, since I was in high school. And just that part of wrestling was really fascinating to me, is that everything, there's nowhere to hide in wrestling. You know, there's a mat, and it's you and the other guy, and you either win or you don't. And that's really what I love most about wrestling.
Stephen Neal, who was a three-time Super Bowl champion for the New England Patriots, he was a two-time NCAA champion for Cal State Bakersfield, world champion, didn't play any football, and then he went into the NFL and played 10 years with the Patriots. But he has said that. He said the one thing about winning Super Bowl rings was that everyone from the team manager to the janitor, everyone gets to be a part of it. They get a Super Bowl ring, where he said that's the one drawback of wrestling, is that when he was a world champion, he got the gold medal and nobody else really got any accolades past that. Does that feed into what you're talking about, that with the individuality of wrestling, that there's really not that component that a lot of other people play a factor in your success?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I mean, I think that's well said by a guy who's done it at some of the highest levels in both sports. So, yeah, just that team aspect of football is really ultimately what led me to pursue my career in football, is sharing in that the joy and the triumphs with other people, whether they're players or, like you said, you know, the manager all the way down to the janitor. So all those people play a role, and I think that's truly the best part of football.
Everyone wants to know how wrestling helps in football, but how about vice versa? How does your football career help you in wrestling?
You know, I think it's really just wrestling helping football. I mean, as far as football goes, you develop a mentality for, you know, trying to punish and bury the guy across from you. But as far as wrestling helping football goes, I think that's, I can't say enough about it, just because the positioning, the instincts you hone wrestling that helps you in football, just having that natural feel for where your hands are, you know, how your knee bend is, where your hips are, how to use your hips, all that stuff. That wrestling teaches you goes hand in hand with football, especially on the offensive line. Just everything is a wrestling match in there, and that's, you know, that's where I learned it. I learned on the wrestling mat in the wrestling room throughout, you know, my high school career and carrying that into college football and now the NFL.
Did you ever think about college wrestling? Was it a tough decision to go with football over wrestling?
It was. I know after my freshman year of football, my true freshman year, I honestly thought about maybe giving it a shot doing both. But at the end of the day, just with the football schedules, it just would be one thing leading into another. My body wouldn't have time to rest after the football season. And then after the wrestling season, my body wouldn't have time to rest going to the spring football. And then it's just an endless cycle. And I wouldn't be doing my first as far as physically, if I pursued wrestling at that point.
Did Tom Brands ever try to get in your ear to try to get you to come out?
No, not while I was at Iowa. I think he was very respectful in that regard, just letting me pursue what I went to Iowa to do. And, you know, I really appreciated that, throughout my career.
So there's never a time where you saw Bobby Telford, who was the heavyweight there, and said, "Hey, let's just give this a shot. Let's see who's the best on campus."
I always entertained the idea that maybe it would be a lot of fun, but I never actually went into the room and did it.
So when Andy was talking about how you have the other offensive lineman, you have a slew of wrestlers there on your offensive line. Do you guys have wrestling conversations?
Oh yeah, we have wrestling conversations weekly, sometimes daily, depending on the week. But it's funny. Some of the other offensive linemen kind of, there's, you know, I get that feeling like, oh, here we go again, another wrestling conversation. So it's kind of funny. It's fun. Those guys were pretty high level wrestlers themselves, so it's fun talking about that stuff with them.
What do you guys talk about? Do you talk about the good old days on the mat? Or are you talking about what's going on in the wrestling world now?
Yeah, we like to joke a little bit about, you know, who'd be better, who was better back in the day, you know, that sort of thing. But mostly it's just stuff that's happening now, you know, as far as stuff that happens on the world stage with guys that are wrestling representing the United States. And that's been a lot of fun, just kind of keeps all of us interested and up to date in the sport.
Austin, I got to think, if we put together a bracket of the best wrestler in the NFL, you got to be the one seed. I can't think of any other Fargo finalists out there in the NFL right now. Who else out there would you like to scrap against? Who do you think would give you a good go?
Yeah,
it's in the NFL.
That's actually funny. So when we were in Colorado Springs training for the game that never happened in Mexico City, we actually went into the wrestling room and I rolled around with Brian Allen, the backup center on the team. And I tell you, he's pretty explosive on his feet. So it was fun rolling around with him. And, yeah, we like to have those conversations all the time. So it's good fun.
You're going into the Super Bowl. That's the ultimate in our country, making it to the Super Bowl. It's the event. It's a holiday. How do you soak this in, man? We're about a week and a half away from you being in that, that great event. How do you compartmentalize that and just embrace this journey?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to comprehend still at this point. I feel like it really hasn't sank in. We haven't really started our prep yet, but I'm sure when that starts, and then especially when we get down to Atlanta on Sunday, it's just going to really hit me full force. And I just got to remind myself to take it all in, because, you know, it doesn't happen every day, every year. You know, there's guys on the team that this is their 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th year, and this is their first Super Bowl appearance. And you know, just going to really cherish it and take everything in.
As far as preparation, you just said you haven't really done the prep yet. This is unique because you do get 2 weeks off between the game. What does preparation look like then? Have they told you how they want you to get ready for this game in particular?
Yeah, I think the biggest piece of advice I got from some of the coaches that have been there is just to take care of all your travel plans for family, your tickets, hotels, all that stuff now within the next couple of days. That way you can solely focus on, you know, winning the Super Bowl. And I think that's great advice. I've got a great jump on that. And, you know, just now I just got to treat it like a normal game and not let the nerves get the best of me.
Are you able to block out all of the conversations from the Saints suing the NFL and just the controversy with that game? How are they making sure that you're shielded from that or people like me asking about it?
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, we have a job to do as players and the refs have a job to do in their position. I think we did our job, and that's at the end of the day, that's all you can really ask for. We ended up winning the game, and you know, credit the Saints. They played a great game, but you know, at the end of the day, we came out ahead and we're really excited and looking forward to playing the Patriots in the Super Bowl.
Austin, you look at your career, you get drafted by the Colts, seventh round pick, you get waived by them, and then you get claimed by the Rams. When you look back on that time of uncertainty, what was that like, and how did you get through that? And what's that time of uncertainty like after a year in?
Yeah, so I wasn't really expecting anything like that to happen with the Colts. I thought at least I'd get to camp and then, you know, see what happened after that. But, you know, that wasn't the case. And, you know, thank God it wasn't, because I landed in a great place and, you know, I took advantage of my opportunities. And, you know, this year especially, like, I got that chance to start those first two games. And, you know, I just kept my nose to the ground and, you know, worked hard and, you know, good things happen. So, you know, credit my coaches too. I think they've done a great job helping me improve my game, and, you know, and here we are playing in the Super Bowl.
Why have the Rams been such a good fit for you?
I think it's just a lot of good people that are realistic about what they ask their players to do, and, you know, smart coaches that have great schemes, and it's just, and a lot of great players that know and understand what it takes to win at this level. You know, it's just been a great fit. And like I said, I think everything happens for a reason. And, you know, here I am.
Now, I'm always interested in living situations. You play for the Los Angeles Rams and you live in Williamsburg, Iowa. But how do you make living accommodations? Are you part-time in Los Angeles? Do you buy two houses? How does that work?
Yeah, so we have a place in Williamsburg that we go back to in the off season, and then as far as out here in Los Angeles, we just rent a place and, you know, we're here for the season and then the off-season program that the Rams have. And it's been good. You know, we have a two-and-a-half-year-old son, so he loves the California weather. He's playing outside with me right now. So it's been good. It's been a great experience and, you know, something that I wouldn't trade anything for.
I think with the NFL, it's on such a pedestal that I think sometimes we don't view it as a job, that this is actually your employment. How do you make sure that you do your job the best as possible? Do you just have to focus on blocking your guy? Do you feel like these are your teammates? Or do you feel like you're part of the team? How do you view being an offensive lineman in the NFL?
I think that's what makes this team so great, is that, yeah, it is a job, but at the end of the day, we're a team trying to accomplish the ultimate goal of winning a world championship. You know, we're at the precipice of that right now, and I think it's just, that's what's made this team so great. Everybody's just playing together as a team. Everybody cares for everybody, each other's successes. And, you know, I think that's something that's carried us to this point. You know, we were down 13-0 in that Saints game, and we just kept clawing our way back, and it was an ultimate team win. So I think that's just what has made the Rams, you know, who we are so far this year.
Going back 11 years, Austin, you're a freshman. We mentioned you wrestled in the state finals your freshman year.
Jeez, 11 years already.
You're on one end of Wells Fargo Arena that night. The final match is Saturday night. On the opposite end, wrestling in the finals is James Ferentz. And you guys are both going to play in the Super Bowl. You followed him as the starting center with the Hawkeyes. What's your relationship like with James?
My relationship with James has always been a good one. He took me under his wing when I got to Iowa and really helped shape me into the player that I am today, honestly. He taught me a lot of great things, showed me how to do things the right way, the Iowa way, really, and just kind of got me set on a great path for the rest of my career. So, and then, you know, I love working out with James now in the off season. He always comes back to Iowa City, the same as me, and works out with Coach Doyle. So getting to kind of continue that relationship with him has been a lot of fun throughout the years.
When you play a game on Sunday and you wake up the following Monday, what is your body feeling?
Soreness and hopefully a lot of joy.
So, I mean, how sore are you though? I mean, I've read stuff where it's just absolute misery after a game and you have to fully recover. What does it feel like to play in a full 60-minute NFL game and then have to wake up the next day?
Yeah, towards the end of the season, the soreness really isn't that big of a deal anymore just because your body's used to that. But, you know, just the general soreness, my shoulders are usually the most sore part on my body for whatever reason. So I try and get those worked on throughout the week, and I'm good to go for the next Sunday. So, you know, it is what it is. We got one more left, and we're going to do our best to win it.
How exhausted are you at the end of a full regulation game?
It varies from game to game. Again, for whatever reason, I think it's a lot of factors go into it. Nerves, how you sleep, how you eat, how you hydrate yourself, all that stuff. So, you know, but at the end of the game, I think it's more kind of emotional and mental and physical exhaustion all wrapped into one. So it's kind of hard to quantify that.
You said that you're a tight team, and that's part of the fabric of this Los Angeles Rams team. There's 53 players on the roster. Do you know most of them? Do you want to get to know most of them, or do you just keep it with your offense? How do you make sure that you keep that team component and know as many people as possible on your NFL squad?
Yeah, I think it's important to try and get to know all 53 guys. I think that's really what builds the team chemistry. And I think if you don't do that, you kind of lose that part, and everybody's just there for a paycheck. And that's really not the case with this team. And, you know, I'm really fortunate and blessed to be a part of it.
How do you build that, though? Because it sounds like there are teams that don't operate that way. How do you make sure that culture is prevalent within the locker room?
I think it starts with the coaches. And Coach McVay has done a great job emulating that himself. And then it trickles down to his coaches and all that stuff. And he's got a lot of great coaches that know what it takes to win at this level. And I think it's just, you know, coaches to players, and it's just kind of eking out, you know, throughout the team.
And what, he's 33 years old. I mean, he must be wise beyond his years, man.
He really is. I mean, Coach McVay is one of a kind. He's smartest coach I've ever been around. He's very charismatic. He knows how to get players to respond. He carries himself in a way that's not a 33-year-old.
What's your relationship like with him on a day-to-day basis?
It's honestly, it's a lot less, you know, coach to player and more just person to person and friend to friend. You know, he talks to you and tries to get your input on things, and he just talks to you like a person. It's not, you know, it's not like boss to employee or anything like that. So I think that's is what makes him such a good coach at such a young age.
Rewinding your college years with the Hawkeyes, you're one of many offensive linemen that have come through that program. When you step into the NFL, what kind of advantages do you feel like you have having been coached by Kirk Ferentz and working with Chris Doyle?
Yeah, I think just the way that they carry they run that program. I think it's one of the reasons why I chose Iowa. Just the way Coach Ferentz has, again, you know, he's built his staff with the people that he wants that are like-minded and do things the way that they should be done. And, you know, that's how it is in the NFL. And I think having that mentality and that culture at Iowa has really prepared me and all of my teammates at Iowa for this level.
Going back even further to Williamsburg, Iowa, where you're from, small town in the state of Iowa. Was that a good wrestling culture there? It's fairly close to Des Moines and Iowa City, about halfway between those two. But what kind of wrestling culture did it have in the town?
I mean, it's a great wrestling culture. I think it's a growing sport in Williamsburg. I think kids love to do it. I think that's again, it goes back to coaches. You need to have coaches that love doing it for the kids. And I think the kids see that and they have fun doing it, especially, you know, Coach Ack, again, he's very involved in the youth wrestling at Williamsburg, and he wants kids to have fun so he can have fun with them in high school. So it's just, I've been blessed with a lot of great coaches. I've been around a lot of great coaches, and, you know, I'm just very lucky in that respect.
Isn't it mind-boggling, though, that you have a college, Grinnell College, right there, and they don't have a wrestling program?
It is kind of crazy. Why your college in Iowa don't have a wrestling program is beyond me.
Your older brother, Holden, was a state champ. What were the living room battles like growing up?
They were less frequent when as we got older, but growing up, it was certainly, with all four of us boys, it was very, very lively, and it definitely got heated a few times. I think that's just what made us closer as far as, you know, the relationships that I have with my brothers now to this day. And it's really just a tribute to wrestling and that sport. And it's, you know, I'm just grateful for it.
Who was getting the best of those goes when you were a freshman and I think he was a senior, you had the weight on him. He was a state champ that year. What were those like?
Oh yeah. He loved to beat me up in practice my freshman year. But I do remember, when I got to college, I'd come back and, I'd just roll around in the wrestling room with the Williamsburg guys. And he was in there one day and we had a good scrap, and, it wasn't good for him. I'll say that.
Is that the last one that you guys have had?
Yes. Yep. He's tapped out since then.
Whether it was wrestling or football, did you battle nerves? And if so, how do you overcome that?
I probably battled more nerves wrestling than I have in football. I will say I've had some pretty good nerves a few times this year, but I think you just got to fall back on your training and have confidence and belief in yourself that you're going to do a good job. You know, that's ultimately what, you know, kind of calms those nerves and allows you to perform.
Hey, I know you're going to be in the Super Bowl, but I got to think going out in the grand march of the Iowa High School State Wrestling Championships is still a special memory for you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, anytime you can win a championship, it's special, you know, regardless of level. So it just really validates all the training and the hard work and the time and the sacrifices that you make to get to that point. And, you know, hopefully it's another notch in my belt come next Sunday.
Well, hey, Andy referenced that there's going to be four players in the Super Bowl that wrestled. Maybe just a round robin after the Super Bowl's over, just to settle it, just to see who's the best.
Yeah, that we might. I know I talked to Brian a little bit about it. He's all for it. He's a competitor just like I am. So it's been a lot of fun having him around.
Well, we're excited to see you in the Super Bowl. Hey, and Andy was going to mention this to you, so I got to do it. I'm still a Stephen Neal fan, so I'm pulling for the Patriots. But you got me swinging back a little bit to maybe cheer for the Rams at some point during the Super Bowl. I know, well, Andy's all in.
Yeah, hopefully Andy can keep twisting your arm and get you fully going the other way.
We appreciate this. Thanks for taking out the time out of your day to talk to us as you lead into the Super Bowl, and congratulations. Thanks for sharing your journey with us.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for having me on.
All right, that was Austin Blythe. He is going to play in the Super Bowl here in about a week, and had a chance to talk to him about that. I love any time, Andy, that you get a chance to relate wrestling to football, and that he certainly embodies everything that we value in both those sports.
Absolutely. Yeah. Such a cool story, and it's really cool for me just to see how it's evolved here. I mean, how it's gone from watching his career, as we talked about, his first year, 10 losses, and really seeing him get over the hump late in the season. And then from that point forward, man, he was a wrecking ball. And best heavyweight in the state for three seasons there in class 2A.
I think the one thing that there's a void in my life now that I would have loved to have seen him compete in college wrestling. I just think that would have been so much fun to see how he could have done, because he certainly had the intangibles to do that, but you got to go the NFL route when you have that opportunity.
Well, I always go back to the 2015 World Semifinals where we had two Tech Falls in less than a minute and watching those guys, how big and strong and athletic they are. And the thing I kept coming back to is like, if those guys grew up in the United States, we might not ever see them in the mat. They might be playing D end in the NFL. They might be playing outside linebacker, tight end, maybe interior lineman like Austin. But we do lose a lot of top athletes to football. But I think the quality of heavyweight in the United States has gotten a lot better here in the last 10 years or so. We've seen that it's not just a pummeler's weight class anymore. And when you're seeing guys like Kyle Snyder getting out there and scoring 20 plus points in a match, and Ty Walls was doing it, and Connor Medberry, and so on and so forth, a lot of those guys were putting up a lot of points, you know, scoring multiple takedowns. It used to feel like 10, 15 years ago, like if you got one takedown in a heavyweight match, that was a match tipper. And we're just not seeing that anymore. We're seeing a lot of guys that get out there and can put up a lot of points. And
it's one of the rare times we'll be watching the offensive line very close if you're a wrestling fan. So with the Super Bowl, be watching the offensive line. We forgot to empty our mailbag with one other comment, and that was about bacon. It came on Andrew Hamilton's Twitter account, and I will just lead in with that because you got some comments about bacon from halfway across the world.
Well, not halfway across the world, halfway across the state.
Well, it was about halfway across the world, like saying
it was about halfway across the state. So Darren Williams down in Lisbon, he caught last week's episode, which we talked about you showing up to record here at my house. We record in my kitchen now that Gable Museum is under renovation, and Kyle showed up last week, knocks on the door about 45 minutes early with a pack of bacon in his hand. Comes in, fires up the oven, and starts cooking bacon. And so I made the comment that it's the best bacon I've had this side of Finland. So Darren Williams wondered, he goes, now I need to know if Finnish bacon is really that good or if it's just a saying I've never heard of. And I told Darren, I responded, I said, I can't speak for all of the bacon in Finland, but the bacon I had in Tampere, Finland, every morning at the hotel leading up to the Junior World Championships, it was on another level. And so Patrick Fleming, he caught that conversation on Twitter, and he said, you need to try the bacon from Dayton Meat Products in Malcolm, Iowa. Mm. We should have actually asked Austin about that when we had him on the line, yeah, if he's ever had the bacon from Dayton Meat Products in Malcolm, Iowa, because that's not far from where he grew up.
Sure, so, yeah.
Boy. So we're going to do our best at some point. We don't get down to Malcolm very often, but we may have to make a detour. Maybe in our great wrestling road trip across America, we'll take I-80 across Iowa and hit up Malcolm, Iowa, stop at the Dayton Meat Products and grab ourselves some bacon.
I don't know that I have been to Malcolm, so maybe you have. So I'm relying on you to fill me in on how to get there, but it's not been in my journeys yet. But this is now incentive because I love bacon. And we have to make this our new quest to get that.
It's on our to-do list now.
All right. Hey, thanks to Jacob Casper and Austin Blythe for being on the program. We've had a lot of fun, as always. So for Andrew Hamilton, the Owl of TrackWrestling.com, I'm Kyle Klingman of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame Dan Gable Museum. You have been listening On the Mat.
Is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.